Welcome back to the Roundtable. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, it's a Wednesday morning. We have our usual Wednesday regulars with us on the panel today. Let's see, Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University of Albany, Robert Griffin, is here. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ray, and all the listeners.
You got an ink stain on your shirt, sir.
Yes, I do. I have a shirt made for radio.
What happened?
I was rushing out, trying to do too much. And,
you know what? That's quite a stain.
That's awful. Oh, that's awful.
That's a stain on your reputation.
Now, if you'd like to see that stain, you can go to WAMC.org and click our live video. And SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor, former New York State Senator Terry Gibson is here. Hello, sir.
Hello. Good morning.
Enjoying your day?
Yes, great day.
I happen to know you're going to Mass Mocha right after you leave here.
Yes, right. My wife is in the green room there hanging out. We're going to go take a little day off, get a little art and culture.
Oh, good for you.
You got to do that every now and then.
Have a nice lunch, probably.
Yeah, somewhere. Have a nice lunch, too. Yeah.
Report back and let us know how
it's a wonderful institution.
I love it.
Also here, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. Hello.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Alan Shartok is here as well. Good morning, sir. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill. Nice to have you back for your finest hour, right?
Yeah, best couple hours of the week.
This is the Roundtable panel.
You got a column for next week, Chris?
For next week?
For this weekend.
Oh, well, tomorrow I have to come up with one.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I have to come up with one.
Here, though.
I know what that's like.
Tomorrow I have to come up with one. Hey, if you come up with anything, write us. Email is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. I hate doing the rules. Alan, you do the rules. I'm sick.
Okay, here are the rules.
You're a fascist. Go ahead. Do the rules.
Did you say I'm a fascist?
Yes. Do the fascist rules on the email.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Here are some of the rules. One, when you write, write respectfully. Two, be nice. Three.
Those aren't in the rules that I'm seeing here.
Three, when you write, make sure you have looked over the writing you have done, so that you don't embarrass the people who are reading your letters because you have an inappropriate or a wrong word there, don't you see?
Okay. I mean, I just have bullet points. I didn't realize there were paragraphs involved with the rules.
It's like the TSA. We can make up new rules as we want as we go
along. Go ahead.
No links, no attachments.
No links, no attachments.
A couple sentences, right? Just a short message. Get your point across. One per customer per day. Proofread, please.
Right. Yeah. Alan is right in the subject line. It'll get read for sure.
People do that.
That's a rule. I know they do. Yeah. I know. I've noticed.
And then the first line usually is, Alan is wrong. It's very funny. The House is preparing to vote to send articles of impeachment against President Trump to the Senate today for the trial on whether he abused power and obstructed Congress. This should happen today. We expect to hear from Nancy Pelosi around 10, and we will carry that for you live. House managers are going to be named. Have we heard that yet?
You haven't heard who it is.
All right, we're going to find that out. The Senate expected to transform the impeachment court into an impeachment court as early as Thursday, although I'm hearing next Tuesday. And we'll, of course, have more clarity on that soon. The Chief Justice will preside over the senators. Alan, it's unclear how much actual power the Chief Justice will have.
Well, I think a lot is going to depend on how much he wants to have. In other words, the Senate will set the rules. That means the Republicans will set the rules. And the foregone conclusion is that he gets off, that Trump gets off no matter what he's done. He said killing somebody on Fifth Avenue was something he could get away with. And I believe it with these people, because keeping their jobs is more important than doing what's right.
I think Nancy Pelosi deserves credit for her tactic of holding back the articles of impeachment for like a month. We're now seeing that there are cracks in the Republican firewall, and there's at least three and maybe more. Even Ted Cruz is saying, well, I'd be open to witnesses if we
is
get to call for, some of ours,
is he
too.
Is up for re-election, Ted Cruz?
No, he just ran.
He beat Beto.
So Pelosi accomplished that. She also now has further evidence because the Lev Parnas information is now in the hands of the Democrats. She did a good job with this, and I'm curious to see who her managers will be.
You mentioned those documents, and Bob Griffin was talking about those. House Democrats have released a trove of documents obtained from a close associate of President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, including a handwritten note that mentions asking Ukraine's president to investigate the Biden case. Documents were obtained as part of the impeachment investigation and show Lev Parnas communicating with Giuliani and another attorney about the removal of U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch. Parnas received messages from a man who appeared to be describing detailed surveillance of Yovanovitch while she was in Ukraine. Documents released yesterday add some new context to the whole thing. Bob, I'll let you go first.
Well, it's a little bit terrifying, but first, I do believe that the trial will begin Tuesday. Monday, again, is Martin Luther King. It's a national holiday in remembrance of all that Dr. King.
Well, yeah, the AP was saying that it might start as early as tomorrow, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I would doubt it. This whole situation is becomes weirder and weirder every day, and the more information that comes out, it sort of I keep waiting for it seems like a bad skit from Naked Gun.
I was watching those movies over the weekend.
You know, it really is. I keep waiting for people to say this is just a satire of the way government is supposed to run. I was more than horrified at the comments or the documents linking Giuliani even more closely to a plethora of people who I don't think anybody would want to be associated with. He seems like he's hanging around with the lowest of the low. We have a situation where we had people actually monitoring the ambassador. It was a team, and this is linked to Robert F. Hyde in the Washington mm-hmm. Post, which is I just think is fascinating. This whole idea that somebody can monitor the electronics and the whereabouts of an ambassador is really really chilling.
And who's the somebody? I mean, we have the president's quote private lawyer who is doing this. And not only that, but the same private lawyer, Mr. Giuliani, now says he wants to be on part of the defense team in the trial. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, because in the letter that Giuliani sent, he said in the capacity as personal counsel to President Trump and with his knowledge and consent. I mean, and every one of these documents just shows that this whole administration is an apple that's rotten in the core. It's worm-filled and it's rotten to the core, and I really do hope that there's enough statesmanship in the Senate to take this seriously and not look at this as just a partisan issue.
Well, how would that work out? In other words, you could take somebody like Susan Collins, who might well lose her seat over this. What'd you say?
Either way, I mean, it's hard to say how this would play in Maine, but go ahead.
I'm sorry, Chris.
She could lose her seat no matter what she does.
Sounds like a good column to me. Yeah,
about Susan Collins. Well, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. I did mean to.
Yes, you did. And well played.
So Collins has got to be looking at this and saying, if she plays this wrong. So she had a golden opportunity, recently to say, I think we should have witnesses. That puts her, gives her some credibility with the anti-Trump crowd, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so but it doesn't mean that when it comes to the vote, that by any means she's going to vote to convict Trump.
I think that's right. Yeah,
it's a shame that this is hanging on Susan Collins, who has proved herself and over again to be a wishy-washy, fake moderate. And why does it always come down to her, Lisa Murkowski, and Mitt Romney? Out of all the other Republican senators, there's not one other one that we can count on. It's
to do what?
To say at least have a trial before we pronounce him innocent. Which seems like a pretty minimum thing to do.
I think there will be a trial. I think there will be a trial.
With witnesses. Trial. A real trial.
There will be witnesses. There are enough Republicans who are going to vote to have witnesses. I don't
have
any doubt about that.
You don't? That's why Pelosi held us up for a month.
Yeah, but what witnesses are the real question? Like, who would the witnesses be? I mean, some of the witnesses the Republicans want to call are
whistleblower.
Right. But so I think that'll be interesting to see what witnesses actually come forward. I agree. Go ahead.
I would expect Bolton would be one of them for sure.
Well, yeah, that would be nice. I would hope so. I think that Nancy Pelosi, I agree with Rosemary. I think she's done a phenomenal job of timing this in a way that has allowed the American public to kind of sit back and process what has happened. Mm-hmm. And it's given them time, valuable time, to talk more about the need for evidence, to subpoena more people, to reveal what we're learning today about these new documents. And I do think that the more information comes out and the more people have time to digest it, the more pressure is likely to be placed on strategic Republicans. And I think it is possible that other Republican senators will come
around. Pelosi's a vote counter. So she's voting she's counting Mitch's votes on this, and she's heard him.
Yeah, I think so.
His position is much weaker now than it was a month ago.
And you see already that he's slowing things down.
Yep.
It was go, go, go. We got to get this. Why are you waiting? Why are you delaying? Now they're dragging their feet. Now they're saying, well, you know, we got the Martin Luther King holiday coming up. We got to let people go home. So I think you're going to see them slow down now as well as they try to process it.
But Susan Collins, to put her at the focus of this, as we did during the last Supreme Court vote, the Kavanaugh vote, is ridiculous. She's unreliable. I hate that she's getting the attention.
I don't get the Susan Collins hate. I really don't. I think she's, I mean, I've met her a few times. I used to
be like her.
I think she's an ethical person. I think she does try to do her best. I think she's often in very difficult positions. She's not going to go the liberal way, the way the Democrats want her to all the time. But, of course, she's a Republican elected in a relatively conservative
state. Why is
she
different from any other senator in that regard, where you have to pick a position and do it?
The only reason that she's in the – is because she is open to arguments and is open to at least – you're preferring the Senate, the Republican senators who aren't willing – to consider.
I think I hate them all, actually.
I mean, it's like the four or five moderates get targeted for the most wrath and hate, but it's just not fair. They're the ones who are at least open to the other side's arguments.
We do have a good EAP program for you, Rosemary, just so you know to deal with that.
Yeah. No, I think that is an interesting perspective.
But you also have to question, I mean, there are those who say they are open and pretend to be open, and they make a public relations strategy out of the whole thing, where they get a lot of attention, a lot of focus, because they say they're open. Are they really open?
Ooh, it sounds like Susan Collins.
Are they really open? I mean, so you have to question that. I'm not speaking for Susan Collins, obviously.
Well,
I think there are people that play the game.
I'm quite sure she's going to vote for witnesses. So, I mean, she'll be among the six or seven Republicans who do.
Well, and Cruz,
so then is she really open then? I mean, if you've already come to the conclusion that she's already made up her mind, is this just a game she's playing with the press to get attention?
I don't think she's playing the game. I don't think it's like she's not holding press conferences. They're going to her because they know that she's a moderate.
Yeah, I agree with that. She is a media invention.
And also, I mean, you know, I've been crediting her, but also she's also playing the role that her state wants her to play, right? I mean, Maine is a state that could go either way, and she's facing a tough re-election. It's not as though it's all out of the goodness of her heart. She's, you know, all of these men and women, you know, look at the voters that are going to reelect them and make their decisions based on that to some degree.
Well, and it's also disturbing to me, though, is that there doesn't seem to be much defense of the institution of Congress by the very people that should be defending it. And I do put a lot of this blame back on McConnell and others. And you made a comment, Ray, about – I think it was you, Ray, that made about Cruz, Senator Cruz, wanting witnesses. But he really wants the whistleblower. Which I find fascinating is that they vilified, an American who has followed the law and done everything correctly, and is now sort of become the villain of this story. I'm looking on both sides, and it's so disingenuous. I mean, I think the biggest loser in this whole thing continues to be. Washington, in the sense of people's perception of our government and how our government is operating, because that's on both sides.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. If you want to weigh in, panel@wamc.org. Big debate last night. I don't know if anybody watched it. There was, a lot of talk about the pre-debate battle between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren over Warren's assertion that Sanders told her in 2018 that a woman could not be elected president. And then there wasn't a great deal by way of fireworks last night. Sanders sort of denied it. Warren let it go. Although I don't think she shook his hand at the end.
No, she did. And they made a big thing out of it. Look, if Bernie Sanders said that to her, I understand it. I mean, it's dumb. It's going to come around and bite him in the behind, or I don't know what word Rosemary would use for that. But it would bite him hard. And he did it. Why? Because the vote, the progressive vote, is split between the two of them. And every vote that one pulls out of the other guy's pot is a hope that they can win in these primaries. So now the gloves come off, and that's what's happening.
Yeah, the Bernie people are furious about last night, at least the Bernie people as represented on Twitter. And it makes you wonder if you buy the argument that one or the other of these people has to consolidate the progressive vote, you wonder if Elizabeth Warren can do that now because the Bernie people are so angry at her and so angry at
just
CNN.
Just for not shaking a hand.
No, because of this whole thing. And we can get into it after
the Warren people are upset because of the script that was found, right?
Yeah, it was a script. It was in writing. In other words, it wasn't he said, she said. It was a script, and it said it went after.
Warren clearly set this up. I mean, there is reason for the Bernie people to be upset. I don't think that's. I mean, they leaked this 4 days before the debate, right? And it's a he said, she said situation. They leak it to CNN right before the debate. Obviously hoping to bring it up during the debate. And, you know, Elizabeth Warren's answer, which was very good, was obviously very scripted and prepared as well. I mean, he says he didn't say it. So you either believe one or the other, but it's not.
This is why women can't win the election. Bernie was right in that statement. I do believe he said it. I do believe it's true also. And the Bernie supporters who are going to believe him no matter what and trash women candidates, they did the same thing, still are doing it against Hillary. It's all happening. I do think Elizabeth Warren is not going to get the progressive vote. She may well deserve it. But the two of them last night arguing about this thing, I'm sorry, Trevor Noah had it best. He made it sound like, you know, two old people arguing in the diner, like, you said you were going to order an appetizer. It was ridiculous.
Well, it is silly, but I mean, he probably said some version of that. It probably wasn't as harsh as she's making it sound, you know.
She didn't make it sound. It was actually her staffers who did this, and she was dragged in saying, well, yeah, he did say it. And that, it I mean, her she's
staffers,
not going to lie.
Her staffers clearly did it under her direction. They don't
oh,
just,
come on.
Four staffers just don't go to the Washington, or go to
and
CNN.
How about Bernie's staffers? They're not working to concentrate the ire of supporters against her.
Well,
of course, that's what staffers do.
Right, but they're obviously rebutting this thing that she claimed he said. But, I mean, it's a he said, she said situation. We don't know what was said in that meeting. It was supposed to be a private meeting. It happened 18 months ago, and it came out 4 days before the debate.
Rosemary,
that's obviously planned.
Rosemary, I still want to take great exception to the idea that a woman can't win in the United States. I think a woman can. I think
the proof's kind of obvious, Alan.
What?
No, a woman cannot, has not won as president.
What are you talking
and
about?
Even her, even the argument of Klobuchar and
that's so sexist.
And it is not sexist. It's empirical fact.
No.
Should they win? If you want to talk about that,
Hillary,
yes, they should.
Hey, Hillary got 3 million more votes.
She didn't win. She did not win, Alan.
Under the existing rules, you know, she didn't. But she got 3 million more votes from the American people than Trump did. And I think that that's very important. And I think by saying that a woman can't win, you do a great disservice to future.
Oh, here we go. This is by saying we're doomed. I'm doing a disservice. I just do a disservice to this.
Hey, listen, can't we all just get along?
Yeah.
No.
I'm going to take a break here.
No, we can't. No
right,
break.
Now listen to me. If I have to stop this car, panel@wamc.org is the email address. It's the roundtable panel, and we will be back with much more coming up.
I'm going down the road feeling bad, Lord. I ain't gonna be treated this way.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Hey, that's Dom Flemons, who will be at Cafe Lena in Saratoga.
Great music.
Oh, isn't it, though?
And great place.
CafeLena.org. January 17th, that's a Friday, 8 p.m. CafeLena.org. It's the Roundtable panel, and what a great panel we have today. I always act surprised, but today it's really great. Robert Griffin is here. Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok. Great to have you all here. Before we get to the letters, let's just go around the room and get some takeaways from last night's Democratic presidential debate. And we'll go to you, Rosemary.
It was boring. There's nothing new. No one made a big mistake. Joe Biden had the best night ever, which is not saying very much. I thought the best was Elizabeth Warren, but not by a whole lot. Not that it'll do her any good. Pete Buttigieg also sounded really, really smart, but kind of scripted like a high school debater. Amy Klobuchar had too much makeup on.
Ouch. Now, not a man in the room could say that, by the way.
I know.
Rosemary Armijo.
I know. I don't understand why we can't talk about appearances. I do think Robin Givens, a wonderful writer, talks about that all the time.
Let's talk about Tom Steyer's terrible tie.
Okay, well, over to you, Chris Churchill.
Yeah.
The guy's a billionaire. He buys his way into these debates, but he can't buy himself a decent
tie. That's interesting.
That's a great article.
What kind of tie did he have? I watched half the debate, didn't notice his tie.
It's an ugly red and black thing.
Yeah, it was.
I don't get it. I don't understand why he's there. You know,
he was clearly out of his league, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it was nicer. I agree with you that it was not that eventful of a debate, although there was some foreign policy stuff that they haven't really gone over that much in detail.
And what struck you in the foreign policy area?
Well, it ends up being kind of muddled. I mean, I think there are actually really distinct differences between the way Biden would approach foreign policy and the way that Bernie or Elizabeth Warren would. But they kind of muddle it all, and they actually kind of make it sound like they all generally agree. But I don't, you know, there's four front runners in Iowa, and I don't think any of them really like distinguished themselves. I don't think anyone damaged themselves. It was, in some ways, it was nice to have a smaller group up on the stage. But on the other hand, I kind of missed Andrew Yang. I kind of missed some of the fresher voices who weren't saying the same things that we've heard over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Bob Griffin.
I'll be honest, I did not watch it. I read about it and saw the clips this morning.
Oh, my God.
Anything that starts after 8 o'clock is too late for me.
I hear you.
But, you know, what I saw this morning, well, this is, struck me as sort of a Wonder Bread showing on stage. Steyer looked like he was tripping over his tongue.
His tie. He was tripping over that ugly tie.
The tie didn't bother me as much as a guy who has a huge black splotch on his shirt.
Oh, you're fine. Yeah, it's radio.
it is. And thank goodness, because I have a face and body for it as well.
That's so funny.
My overarching opinion is that they were all playing it relatively safe. And Klobuchar was trying to come out and trying to swing above her weight class because she's so far in the polls, and it just didn't take. The major takeaway, I think, has already been said, and that's Biden didn't do anything to hurt himself. I mean, he didn't shine, although he never says that these type of debates are where his strengths are.
You're looking at me as if
your turn.
Your turn.
I watched the whole thing. I think that all these candidates have now got their talking points down really well, and so what we're really seeing is it's the same debate over and over and over again. We're not learning anything new. It's the same talking points. They're very predictable. I think Biden did well only because he didn't really have that much to say, and he didn't really have an opportunity to get himself into trouble, as he usually does. I really do worry about his ability to stand toe-to-toe with Donald Trump on a debate stage and come out looking good. Mm. I really do worry about that.
Is there anyone on that stage last night who you think would do well?
Yes, I do think that Elizabeth, I think both of the women would do well against Donald Trump. I think Bernie Sanders would do well against Donald Trump. I think Buttigieg would do good well. So Biden is the one who I think in terms of the debate part of it is weak. You know, when I look at these debates, I'm looking for a candidate because I want to beat Donald Trump. I'm looking for a candidate that can, one, just win the Democratic nomination, win the primary. I'm looking at one that can stand toe-to-toe with Donald Trump in a debate. And I'm looking for the one that can win the pivotal swing states. I mean, I think you got to be able to do all three of those things. And I worry about Biden being able to do that debate part of it.
But that's only one part of it.
It is one part.
I think people are making it sound like Trump is this master debater. He's really not very good at it.
No,
I like the way
he's
said
not.
That.
He's not.
He's a bully.
But he's a bully, and you have to be able to stand up to a bully. And I think the two women in particular are very well equipped to do that, in my opinion.
Alan!
Well, I was asleep. You know, I mean, I got to sleep at 7:30, and I was just having dreams of Fire Island walking on the beach.
Here we go.
Every program
so that drives
to get
you nuts,
it in.
Doesn't?
It's an inside joke. Yes, he's been doing. He does it to taunt me.
Yeah, it's true. So I watched the same clips everybody else watched this morning. It's interesting to see what the press does with mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the failure to shake hands at the end becomes a huge thing. The fact that Biden didn't, as Terry just said, didn't make mistakes becomes
that's a pretty low bar for a successful night, by the way.
Well,
if you're a presidential candidate,
except that no matter what goes on in this country, Biden keeps leading in the polls, including in the Iowa polls. Mm-hmm. So there's something about the comfort of this guy which is why they call him Uncle Joe. But there is something about the comfort of this guy that appeals to huge numbers of Americans. And I'm fascinated by that.
Well, he's also a moderate, right? And yeah. I think a lot of people like that about him. I think the thing that could possibly shake things up in that debate last night was the kind of the Bernie Elizabeth Warren exchange. And and the shaking hand things after. I have no idea how that will play out, but I mean that is the one thing that voters could look at and to say, I think he or she was wronged or right or.
Well, of course, don't you think that once an accusation, which is that you told me that a woman couldn't win, is made, it certainly won't transfer to all of the people who are going to vote in this election, but it certainly will be. Done by people will say, there will be some people who believe it.
Whether it's true or not.
Well, there will be some people who believe it, and there will be some subset of that group who think that that's probably true. I mean, Rosemary has said that.
I believe he said it, and I also believe it's true, and it makes no difference in my opinion.
Given the timing, though, why would he say that after Hillary already had, whether she won the popular vote, which she did, or actually won the presidency, which she didn't, she had a very strong showing. Why would Sanders then say that in 2018?
Because they're doing the same thing we are, discussing who can vote, who can win against Trump. Yeah. And I use myself again as an example. I'm a big Warren supporter. I love her for the same reasons that I've spoken out for years in favor of Hillary. I don't think she can win. I think she would lose against Trump. Because we have a country that's still filled with bigotry and distrust of women.
Is there anything she's doing that would lead you to that conclusion?
No.
But no, did he say that a woman couldn't win?
A woman can't win the election.
He didn't
say believe
you can't win.
He did.
Allegedly.
He said a woman can't. So
allegedly.
That's very good. Thank
allegedly.
You, Chris.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
Chris Churchill.
He's being misrepresented. But, I mean, they were in 2018. They're discussing, obviously, what's coming up. They must have been discussing, I would presume, which one of them best represented the progressive wing of the party. And that is an argument in Bernie's favor. I do think he can win rather than more easily than. I think they'll both have trouble, don't get me wrong, because Trump will go after, call them all communists, not just socialists. But of the two, I think Bernie has a better chance to win as a progressive Democrat.
But, you know, it bothers me, though, that just the comment itself bothers me. I mean, at my core, I believe that one of the things that makes this country great is its opportunity. And the idea that that you say, well, a woman can't win, or a black can't win, or a gay can't win.
Which gets proven wrong every election.
For something in Sanders' position to say that, I think goes against sort of what I would have thought was one of his core beliefs, that this is a land of opportunity. And even though the hill may be a little steeper to climb, it's still worth climbing, and that fight is still worth fighting.
Oh, the fight is worth, just like I said, I think it's hopeless, but we keep fighting. It is 2020,
though,
Bob, and women are not constitutionally protected in this country. The ERA, introduced in 1972, has not passed, and Virginia is about to become the 38th required state, and that still won't make it because there'll be a big fight then over whether whether it's on time. And that will go to the Supreme Court, and we're going to get down to one person deciding it. And my hope is that if we get there and Ruth Bader Ginsburg just asks for the vote as a favor to her because she's fought all her life for women's rights. And that's what we've gotten down to. So, no, I don't think. I think it would be, should we have a woman president? I think we already should have, but we don't. And I don't think voters are ready for it.
It's the roundtable panel. Robert Griffin is here. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, and Terry Gibson. You could join us by emailing panel@wamc.org. And a reminder, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi will announce impeachment managers at 10-ish. And so we will break for that whenever it happens. In the meantime, it's the roundtable panel, and we return in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting concerts with Liz Phair, Car Seat Headrest, and the Fresh Grass Festival, plus art by James Terrell, Laurie Anderson, Liddell Moe, and Titus Kaffar, massmocha.org. Scenic Hudson, working to connect people to outdoor adventures in the Hudson Valley, scenichudson.org to discover more. And Hudson Beach Glass, a gallery for contemporary functional and sculptural glass and artisan jewelry, plus by appointment opportunities for hands-on glass blowing experiences. HudsonBeachGlass.com for details.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It is 9:45 on a Wednesday morning. The Roundtable panel in session. You join us by emailing us panel@wamc.org. And I understand, Professor Dr. Mr. Alan Chartok, that we have some letters.
We do. And still they come. Ryan says, panel, I think we all want Susan Collins to be Olympia Snow. And she isn't. She has never been nearly as independent or bipartisan as a former colleague. And never will be, parentheses, because she'll probably be out next year. And that's from Ryan. I don't know. You know, she's played it successfully. She's a United States Senator. She's been United States Senator. I don't like her, but you got to give her some credit for what she's accomplished.
When I was in Maine, she was so popular I could never see her losing an election. But a lot has changed since then. The country is much more partisan than it was, and you know, it was before Trump, before Kavanaugh, before all this stuff. So who knows?
And you know, she's very charming. She's a very, very nice woman. I actually really enjoyed working with her.
What did you do?
When I was with the Department of Homeland Security, I was up the hill often doing briefings and meetings, and I always found her to be a true gentlewoman. I mean, really nice person.
Me too. Yeah.
What were you doing in Maine? I didn't know that.
That's where I worked before I came here. I was a reporter there for a bunch of different newspapers.
Really?
Great state, huh?
Very nice state.
Wow. Very nice.
Very nice, yeah.
You go swimming in the ocean up there?
Sometimes.
Once.
Sometimes. You know, you get used to it.
Yeah.
It's chilly, but you do get used to
it. There are pebbles on the beach.
It's true.
Richard says, Dem debate. Panel, yesterday's Democratic presidential nominee debate was won by Senator Warren. Despite her leftist positions, Warren seems to be a candidate who can unite Democrats and even some Republicans by her straight-talking, no-nonsense approach. I hardly expected to declare her the winner. In parenthesis, I was more inclined to support Biden or Klobuchar, but Warren had the most poise and the most inspiration. America would do well to elect her as our first woman president. And that's from Richard. And then we've heard from Judy in Montgomery, who's always smart. Good morning. It is so refreshing to hear Rosemary give kudos to Nancy Pelosi for the way she has steered the House in the impeachment process. Glad she has stopped bashing the Dems for doing a, quote, terrible job, parenthesis, a few weeks ago. Have trusted Ms. Pelosi from day one. Thanks for all. Favorite morning show.
Oh.
Thank you.
Go figure.
Melinda said, Susan, enough trying to predict who will do what. Susan Collins will do whatever she will do in a moment, as will all the other senators. We cannot reasonably predict what will really happen next week. Wait and see is all we can do. Well, you know, Melinda, I take a different view of that. I think it's our job to talk about what pressures are on these various people to
Makes
do
for
what.
Dull radio, too. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
A moment of silence. Yeah, that'll take about 30 seconds. Although it'll be fun watching Ray try to fill that space.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of fun. Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
As my mom would say, Chris, oh, really? Panel from Eric in Amherst. Only on MLK Day, we often focus on racial equality, but pay insufficient attention to King's principle of nonviolence. Of course, violence is Trump's first recourse rather than diplomacy. Unfortunately, Sanders and Warren's comments in last night's debate ensure that, should either win the nomination, the Republicans will again use the fear tactics that succeeded for them in demonizing George McGovern and Michael Dukakis as anti-military.
Well, and you also have them going after Kerry as well. I mean, it's been a proven track record for them.
Yeah. Well, there was a huge
swift voting was an outrage.
Huge
cut in the Pentagon budget, several billion dollars. I wonder.
Yeah, going to the wall.
What'd you say?
Yeah, I mean, what he's going to divert to the wall? Is that the $7 billion?
Well, I just said that there was I just read in the paper.
Yes.
Yeah. I read in the paper. I read in the Daily News.
You know
It's an old folk song. I read it in the Daily News. Okay. I read it in the paper that there's something like a $7 billion cut in the Pentagon resources. So maybe somebody could use that.
You know, there. Just on that note, there's not a Democratic candidate in the field right now that Republicans aren't going to find some way to build a fear campaign against. I mean, they're going to do that. They're all targets for that. The real question is, which of the candidates can withstand that and remain appealing to those voters in the swing states? And that's what I think we have to look for.
This one, I think, is directed towards you, Rosemary, but I'm not sure. It says, beware of using the word hate on the air. I agree with the usage, but the word has very negative connotations at this time. That's from Steve. Okay, let me read that again. I agree with the usage.
Who did you hate?
I do use the word a lot, so let me just say TSA. That I have a strong distaste for that letter.
You loathe it.
You know, well played.
I love it. Okay, and then we also heard from Sonia. Don't take the bait. If you can't see that the establishment is trying to split the progressive votes, you're an idiot. I like it.
I think that was directed at you.
Must have been.
Sanders can be found in many videos over the years.
We were just waiting for next week to see if it actually happened. That's what
Don't leave, Rosemary.
Sanders can be found in many videos over the years saying a woman could and should be president, dating back to 1987. Thanks to this media-made debacle, Sanders collected over $1.5 million more dollars in donations last night. We're going to win, Sanders, in 2020.
You know, I do think that the progressive vote has been split for a very long time and remains split, and I don't think you can blame any particular candidate or party for that. It's split because we're a diverse country, and the polls show every day that people who call themselves progressives have different preferences. So I hesitate to point fingers at any particular candidate and blame them for a split.
Well, Sanders is saying that, or Sanders' people are saying that, in that now famous piece of prose that was found on a piece of paper, that the reason that people shouldn't vote for her is because she appeals to the upper classes.
Well, that's what you would expect them to say. They want their candidate to win. So they're out there saying what they need to say and creating those messages. And, I mean, that's what supporters do. So you can't blame them for that.
Yeah. R. Jeremy writes, okay, note, Bernie believes a woman can win, but not now, not against Trump. Please talk about this important distinction.
That's it. That's it exactly. That's why I don't understand why this is a controversy, because a lot of us think that way.
But why is that the case, though? In other words, why could not a woman beat Trump? I do not understand the rationale.
Especially when you read that original assessment of women that Trump said that is all over the place about grabbing them by the genitals and the rest of that stuff. It would seem to me a lot of women would be very upset with all
that. Let me woman-splain this to you. There is a bias against women in our country. And Trump has gotten away with it and inflamed it. And part of the backlash against Obama, Michael Moore said this, you got a black president in, you think now we're going to give you a woman too? And it is not going to happen. I think there are some women in the future who might be able to get past this. I think AOC, when she comes of age, to be president.
So you're changing your tune now?
No, I'm not changing my tune.
Sounds like you're changing your tune.
Maybe if you let me finish.
Yeah, but that's not the only bias. You know, there's a bias against gay people. There's a bias against Jews.
I don't think Buttigieg.
Does that mean Buttigieg
either.
And Sanders shouldn't be the nominee too? For this, I mean, you know, you could take it a lot of different.
Chris,
your
argument
strategy is that only Biden.
All right, let her finish. Ho! Let Rose. She's getting upset. Rosemary finish.
And then I'll lash out. You know, if I get upset.
Just don't say you hate him.
No, I don't. I don't hate anybody on this panel.
Really?
I love you all. Yes, I think they're great.
You hate the TSA?
I hate the TSA.
All right, but anyway, we digress.
We do. No, look, the strategy right now, and you've heard us all say it, is to beat Trump. I do not think a woman could beat Trump. And I don't think Pete Buttigieg would have an easy time. And Warren and Sanders both will also have to fight the assassination machine, that is the Trump campaign. And he will paint them as communists, which will look terrible in conservative
eyes. Do you think
a
Jewish man can win the presidency?
Yeah, I think we're past that.
Well, you bring up communism. Let's run around the panel. Now, bearing in mind that nothing is pure, the quote-unquote capitalism that runs here is not entirely capitalism. There are socialist elements, right? We know that. But can an avowed socialist in Bernie Sanders win the popular vote in this country, even though there are elements of socialism already at play in our society today. Alan.
Well, you know, Roselle, my wonderful wife of 49 years, came in the other day and said, Alan, do you think Bernie can win? You know, and I thought about that a long time. Bernie has one thing that Trump has, too, and it that he's outrageous. So, and that some people want something so different that they might be willing to throw their bread on the waters and vote for a Bernie. I don't know. I mean, it's a fascinating question. Could he have won last time when Hillary lost? I don't get that.
He's also very, I mean, a lot of voters are looking for authenticity, and that's one thing that he hasn't, gone
he
for.
He has, yeah.
And I do think he could win. I think if you look at the poll, if you look at kind of graphs of where a lot of voters are, there's a big chunk of voters who are very economically liberal but socially conservative, and there's really no party that speaks to those people. Bernie is obviously economically liberal, but he kind of is always, that's his focus. He really de-emphasizes the social issues
but,
in ways that, so I don't think he'll scare away some conservatives on those issues the way that some other Democratic candidates might.
On issues, perhaps, but the word, and he is a guy, and you're right, authenticity. He doesn't shy away from it. He says that word. He says socialism often. My question is, given biases, as you and Rosemary were discussing, I mean, can you win a popular vote in all those states that Hillary didn't win last time by proclaiming yourself a proud socialist?
Yes, I think he can win in, you know, he may shift the map around a little bit. He may have more trouble in a place like Virginia than she did, but I think he'll do well in Michigan, Wisconsin, places like that.
Barbara wrote to the panel and said, Rosemary, you go, girl. And that's Barbara, I think it's from Longmeadow, unless her last name is Barbara Longmeadow.
In which case, you just said her last name.
Yeah, you make a point.
Yeah. So let's just say that she lives in Longmeadow.
She lives in Longmeadow.
It's a nice place to visit. I've been there.
Longmeadow?
Yeah. It's long.
Right. It's a long meadow.
Heck of a long meadow.
And Frank says, debate night. Warren claims Sanders made a sexist comment, and Bernie denies that it happened. Does the fact that one of the two leading Democrats is lying hurt the party in the general election? Which of those two do you think is the liar? Thanks, Frank in New Jersey.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Chris, but I was thinking about this morning. Bernie said, I never said it. Now, either he's a liar or he's not a liar.
I don't think it has to be that one of them is lying. I mean, two people can have a conversation. This is a private conversation between two people. You can have a conversation with two people, and things are interpreted different ways.
Right.
You know, I could have said what I thought I said, but you may have heard it differently than I intended it. Or, you know, there's a lot of gray area.
Well, but these are people that are going to be running against the lying liar, lyingest liar of all time.
Yeah, like it's like Trump said, the four of our embassies were under threat of imminent attack. And by that he meant, well, you know, he thought about it and had a bad feeling. It's the same? No, there's a difference between a lie and a misinterpretation.
I will say, though, if it comes down to a he said, she said between those two people, I think Bernie is going to come out ahead because I think he does have a reputation for honesty that Elizabeth Warren does not have.
All right, we got to take a quick break here. Now, a reminder that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi will be speaking. Wait till we're off the air.
I have to talk to him later.
Nancy Pelosi will be speaking shortly. If we are in news and she starts talking, we will go directly to Nancy. It's a hoedown. It's the roundtable panel, and we're waiting for Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker, to name impeachment managers. We will take you to that live. It will happen any moment. Meantime, it's the roundtable panel. Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, Terry Gibson, Robert Griffin, and Alan Shartok. And Alan, why don't we read a few letters?
Okay, Frank writes, Warren claims Sanders made a sexist comment, and Bernie denies that it happened. Does the fact that one of the two leading Dems is lying? We read that already?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I appreciate
that's okay.
Yeah. Nah,
it was a reprise. It's a blip in the Matrix.
Don't make us do it again.
Warren and Rosemary. Who will Rosemary vote for, given she admires Warren and thinks she can't win? From Elizabeth.
Any person who is the Democratic candidate, I will be voting for.
Sure.
I want to beat Trump.
Yeah. But in a primary?
I'd vote for Warren.
Okay.
I thought you were going to write in Chris Churchill.
Yeah.
I would.
There you go.
I would. John says Democratic debate. Good morning, panel. Any thoughts on why the debate last night didn't cover any aspects of border defense or immigration reform? Seems it's either a topic that would expose the candidates as being politically out of step with mainstream America, or that it wasn't considered an important topic. Thoughts, John?
I didn't, you know, I only caught the last hour and 15 minutes of the debate. So did they not cover that?
They didn't know.
Much, but we know that health care continues to be very high in issues that voters care about from all the polling.
Because it polls number one.
So they spend a lot of time on health care because the candidates do have a lot of differences on this subject. So that's where you saw most of the conversation.
Yeah, and obviously they talked a lot about Iran. So, you know, that was obviously topical. I mean, it seems to me that after every debate, you have people who say, well, they didn't talk about this, this, this. And, you know, it's hard to get to everything.
We get that here on the panel also.
Yeah.
You know,
you didn't cover this, this,
well,
this.
No, you didn't talk
about.
Oh,
you made letters,
you didn't talk about, you know, the spate of nose picking in the United States.
Williams College croquet team and such. Yes, understood.
We can talk about that. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but there's always somebody.
Do you ever notice when you're driving people in Mexico?
I mean, you can be sure it will come up in later debates when the field gets smaller. You can be sure that we'll be back to the border security issue. It's not going away.
Right.
Do you guys ever think that when Americans are asked to list the number one, two, three, and number one is apparently health care, and number two is climate change, which is interesting to me in itself. Do you ever think that people say something is important because their mothers thought it was important or told them it was important, as opposed to whether it's really important? Do you get the question? Do you understand the question here?
You mean they're telling people what they think they should say rather than what they really think?
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be, there's probably
are you saying
something
people are
that.
Less than honest?
Well.
Less than candid?
Okay.
Well, look, but their environment drives their position, of course. I mean, I think that's what you were arguing, right?
Well, polls are basically a gauge of an individual's attitude towards particular issues, and that's certainly influenced by lots of things, family being one of them, but also your environment, where you live, and your education. So
well, you know,
a lot of different things.
Healthcare is very important, obviously. Nevertheless, you know, is it more important than climate change? Nonsense.
But there are some issues that people feel very viscerally, and feel a lot of anxiety about, and healthcare is certainly one of those. I think it has been proven that people do vote on healthcare. It's one of the reasons Congress. You know, you had that swing against Obama after the Affordable Care Act was enacted.
And
right?
It's one of the
really scares people whenever you change it one way or the other.
That's right. And one of the reasons the House went blue, I think, was on healthcare. Okay. So anyway, Russ says three P's. You'll get the three P's from the impeachment trial: pandering, posturing, and preening for the cameras. Trump will conclude that he is untouchable.
Seems
you
like
wrote it? I read
that.
It. It's right. Good. Charles says, debates. Good morning. Concerning the comment that debates don't change the voters very much, look back on how Ronald Reagan humiliated Jimmy Carter in their debate. Love the show. And that's from Charles.
Speaking of Ronald Reagan, did anybody see the commercial with Ron Reagan Jr. last night?
Yeah,
with the
ran a bunch of times. Yeah.
Not Afraid
Atheists.
To Burn in Hell commercial with Ron Reagan Jr.? That was,
so
to
explain
me,
it. Explain it.
Basically, Ron Reagan Jr., I guess, is a spokesperson for an atheist organization.
He has been for a while.
And promoting it. And you know, the big tagline in the commercial was, I'm not afraid to burn in hell.
Okay, here comes House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. We will take you now live. And there you have it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has announced the House managers who will act as prosecutors in the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. This is WAMC. You're listening to The Roundtable. The Roundtable panel will reconvene in a moment. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 10:36, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has announced the House managers for the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. They include Democrats Adam Schiff of California and Gerald Nadler of New York, who led the House impeachment probe. Pelosi made the announcement this morning, hours before the House expected to vote to send the articles to the Senate for trial. Donald Trump was impeached last month on charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. The charges stem from his pressure on Ukraine to investigate Democrats as he withheld security aid to the country. It's the Roundtable panel, and we're back now. Robert Griffin is here, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. Terry Gibson, what'd you make of that?
Well, I thought that they made some very good points. I thought it was a great opportunity to go before the American people and state their case one final time before it's handed off to the Senate. I think they made it very clear that the president has violated the Constitution, he's broken laws, and that they've done everything they can to hold him accountable, and they're hoping the Senate will do their job.
Anybody else?
Well, I thought it was interesting how the speaker made sure that the managers were demographically and in every other way a representative of the people who were in the House of Representatives. It's clear that Adam Schiff is going to be the lead to me because he was a prosecutor himself, and because he is so incredibly articulate.
The seven listed by Nancy Pelosi within the last few minutes: Jason Crow, Val Demings, Jerry Nadler, Zoe Lofgren, Adam Schiff, Hakeem Jeffries, and Sylvia Garcia. Interesting, Zoe Lofgren, this will be the third impeachment for her. She was a staffer, I guess, in the Nixon impeachment?
Yeah.
And was on board in Congress for the Clinton impeachment. Anybody struck by anything that happened just now in the press conference?
I like that she reminded Trump, and I'm pretty sure she was aiming the barb directly at him, that he has been impeached. You have a stain on you.
She's been saying that over and over.
I know, because it really irritates the heck out of
him. You think that she's just saying that almost as a consolation prize, knowing in the trial will not end in a conviction?
Not a consolation prize. I think she did as much as she could, and she's reminding Democrats, you did. We've held people to account as far as our powers allow us to do. And President Trump, this is the asterisk next to your presidency for life.
Rosemary, what do you think the difference between the Clinton impeachment and the Trump impeachment is? I mean, it's an interesting thing because they keep raising the Clinton impeachment, and yet it seems to me to be of a different magnitude.
Well, the crime that Clinton committed, technically it's perjury, which is serious, but the perjury was over lying about an affair. It had nothing to do with his presidency, with his duties as an officer of the people. And Trump, the charges have to do, they're deeply official. And he's a traitor to the country, if you believe the charges against him. So that's a big difference.
Doesn't the Clinton impeachment kind of suggest that maybe it isn't as big of an asterisk as people like to think that it is? I mean, he went on to have
and he's still well-liked today.
But here's the other thing about the impeachment. I oppose the impeachment of Clinton as strongly as I'm in favor of this one. And now when I look back at it years later, I do think it was justified. Our views about what he did have changed, about the importance of what he did, that's changed. And I hope that will be the case with Trump, because I do think the Senate is going to let him off.
But wasn't obstruction also part of his...
Obstruction of Congress, and of course, what Trump did is far more grand, and I hope that I do fault the Democrats. We talked about this in the break. Why didn't they go to court? Yes, it would have taken them more time. They would have lost momentum, all that stuff. But we still don't know what is the extent of executive privilege, what is the right of Congress vis-a-vis the president when it comes to these investigations. Those are important issues that should be resolved.
Well, Rosemary, I think to some degree they are being resolved. I think there are cases that are wending their way through the judiciary. And so maybe we'll get some answers.
Right.
But I think everybody understood it was just a way of stopping any kind of forward movement.
Because it was obstruction.
Yes.
But one of the other issues, one of the other differences that strikes me between the Clinton impeachment and the current situation is the absolute flat-out refusal to turn over anything, so any documentation. Yeah. I understand some of the witnesses, although I think Trump has been allowed to extend executive privilege way beyond where a reasonable person would say that the privilege exists. But, you know, the 13,000 documents that were requested, none of them were turned over.
Right.
And to me, it becomes a really disconcerting pattern that if a president can get away with this, basically you're electing a dictator.
That's the argument for going to the courts, right? To set the, because otherwise you worry that you're setting a precedent where future presidents will do the exact same thing.
Right.
The other difference in the two impeachment cases is that we just live in a different world now. The world is so much more divided. Our country is more divided, or at least publicly more divided. Back then, you had examples of the House and the Senate actually working together fairly well to put together the trial. There was a lot of cooperation, public cooperation. There were bipartisan votes, both in the impeachment process and in the trial process. I mean, there were a lot of Democrats that were very upset with Bill Clinton for what he did and felt very strongly that he needed to be held accountable. Here, it's, you know, everything is pretty much along party lines, and it's just a different country.
It's not better for the country, though, I would argue. I'd argue that we're in a worse shape politically because of the political climate than we were.
You know what's also really different is that this is a challenge to the separation of powers. Bill Clinton was not. It was about him, his conduct, whether you thought it was impeachable, but it was all in the context of the Constitution. This is a challenge. If Trump wins this, which I think he will, then you have a much stronger presidency than you did before that. And you really have to wonder about he. So far, he has taken over the right of the power of the purse from Congress. He's taken over now. This would be I can do anything I want in foreign policy, declaring wars. He is making the presidency that Bill Barr and Bolton have long envisioned. And it's an empire.
Yeah,
it's an emperor.
I share your concerns. I mean, the Senate, it's really in the hands of the Senate now as to whether or not our Constitution is going to be strong, our democracy is going to be strong, and we're not going to just slip further into authoritarian rule.
Assuming for a second that the Senate does what we expect them to do, which is to acquit him, my question to you, Terry, would be, if that is the case, what do you expect is the outcome, you know, of all of this? How difficult will it be to take any of this stuff back?
Well, I just think the worst case scenario is that the Senate decides to give him a pass and say it's okay to act this way, and that Trump takes that as permission to just continue acting in a style that breaks every norm, every law, every constitutional.
But there's an election coming up in just 8 months or whatever it is now. I mean, the people will decide ultimately. I don't think say that this is just on the Senate. You can make a pretty good argument that an impeachment so close to an election, not an impeachment, but removing a president so close to an election is an undemocratic thing to do. And that the best thing to do is let voters decide if they think this is irremovable offense.
Yeah, but Chris, what if he had?
Because who's better to remove him than voters?
What if he had shot somebody on Fifth Avenue, taking it to its extreme? You mean if it's close to election, you can't hold him accountable?
Well, that's obviously
not that
a different situation.
Either. It's not. I mean, in election, you know, political time, it's not that close. I mean, if they're done in April,
Iowa caucus is,
you know, it's not until November.
Weeks.
This whole idea of time and when you can apply constitutional norms is really dangerous. But thank you, Mitch McConnell. Close in election year, you can appoint a president, can appoint a Supreme Court justice. There is nothing in the Constitution that suggests that there's a time limit for that or for impeachment. No,
there's nothing in the Constitution.
But Chris, let me push back for a second. What bothers me, though, is that the American people don't get an opportunity to see exactly what happened because most of the information is being withheld. So you can't say, well, we're going to fix it in the election because none of the information is out. And let's be honest, they're playing a long game to get them through the election. This information that is now trickling out, and frankly, I think there's a lot more out there than what we're seeing, won't be part of the election calculations because it won't be available. Alan, to answer your question slightly differently, anytime government takes an authority, it's damn near impossible to get it back. So anytime the government makes a move that somehow changes some of the foundational elements of the Constitution, mm-hmm. whether it's our individual freedoms, whether it's a balance of power, it takes momentous amounts of power in order to change that. And that's what I always worry about.
Well, you can flip that on its head. Republican, presumably the defense, could say, listen, if it was allowed – if all these subpoenas were allowed to go through unchallenged, that shifts the power to Congress.
And if that was the case, and it looked like it was frivolous, and people were getting up there saying, no, that's not the case, guess what? Congress would have paid the price for it. Right now, it becomes so muddled that nobody can really make a clear determination.
But you just said, tough to get rid of. We're out of time here, I'm sorry to say. But it's tough to put that power back once you have taken it.
Absolutely.
We have to end it here, but this was fun.
We do?
Yes, we do. I'm sorry. But we'll be back tomorrow.
Okay.
Thanks to Robert Griffin. Thanks to Terry Gibson. Thanks to Chris Churchill. Thanks to Rosemary Armeo. Thanks to Alan Shartok. Thank you all for listening. Now, there's plenty more ahead. We have coming up the Congressional Corner with Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney. And then next hour, we will hear from Robert J. Lifton. And also the Battenkill Corral. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.